Our panelists are discussing the case for Kohanim. Should we or should we not continue the institution of the priesthood? Rabbi Hidri, you have the floor.
Hey, thank you, Miriam, for hosting. And the official title was The Case for Kohanim, Essential or Not, right? Are they essential workers? Would they be able to perform their services during the time of Corona? So I'd like to argue not. And I think this has been true not only in our times, but for the past 2,000 years. Although this Parashat HaShavua Emor is all about the laws of the Kohanim and their significance, I think if we look at who have been the religious leaders of our nation since the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, we'll point to one group, and they're called the rabbis. And so since then and until now, while Kohanim, we give them a little bit of honor. We let them go first to the Kohen, and you know they can make Zimun, and so you know we'll give them a little bit of a remnant of something. But essentially, the Kohanim no longer have the role of religious leadership. It is the rabbis who have been successful in getting us to where we are today.
Just to point out our biases up front, I am a Kohen, and the rabbi is a rabbi. So take everything we have to say with a grain of salt. I also want to thank Michael Franco, who spent an hour with me discussing the ideas, breaking them down, and any eloquence that I have is largely due to him challenging me, and hopefully we'll get him to jump in also if I need help, if the rabbi is too much for me to handle. I would respond to the rabbi's argument by saying that I think that pointing out that we've moved away from the kahuna and emphasizing that aspect of the narrative is damaging in a few ways. I think first, it reads as disingenuous to the text itself, which is elaborate in details about the Kohanim, about the laws and their restrictions, about the beautiful garb that they would wear, about the beautiful keleh, the mishkan, and the details of the ceremony. I think it just reads as disingenuous. It's very hard to be a Baal Koreh and read the parasha every week after hearing that we've moved away from it. And secondly, I think that when we take this line of argument, while it does point out a lot of great things like the democratization of spirituality, it also kind of throws out the baby with the bathwater and leaves a lot on the table in terms of understanding the beauty of the institution of kehuna and its potential role. Now, whether we're going to go back to it one day or not, this is a theoretical discussion. And I think that whilst engaging in the theoretical discussion, it's really all about our imaginations, what we could conceive of, and the value of these different, of imagining these different utopian realities. So I guess that's my opening statement.
All right. Well, I have to say I'm a little disappointed in Michael Franco because I thought he was my friend and on my side. He was backing me up with sources, and now I hear that he's providing the other side with sources. So
No, you got it all wrong. I was arguing your side with Morris.
And luckily for all of us, we recorded the conversation, and if we released this conversation, we could release that one subsequently on the various channels so you could see where the ideas were developed, and the truth of Michael's allegiance could be parsed out.
All right. Well, I would like to call in a friend here. And Michael pointed out to me the very famous source about the three crowns. So Michael, would you share that with us so we can analyze it further?
Gladly. So there's a beautiful midrash that states that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to give the Keter Melucha, the crown of kingship. He gave it to the children of David HaMelech. And then when it came to the crown of Kehuna, the crown of priesthood, he gave it only to the children of Aharon. But then when it comes to the crown of Torah, Keter Torah, Hashem gave it to all of Bnei Israel, and it's not something that any specific clan or any specific family has a right to. And just quoting another statement by the Hachamim, that Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, that it's almost as though the Torah knocks away everything else. That, when you're comparing the Torah to anything else, it is the greatest jewel that we have. So no matter what party you belong to, if you have Torah, you have everything.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. And the main point of this midrash is that while the crown of priesthood is only goes to that one line, it's not accessible to everybody. And so too, kingship is only for the tribe of Yehudah, for the line of David. But the crown of Torah is open and accessible to everyone who wants to take part in it. And then that way, it's much better than the others. It's more inclusive. And the Midrash ends by saying, if you have this one of Torah, then it's as if you have all of them. So therefore, you see how the crown of Torah is not only equal, but better than all of them put together. Another really important source, which shows that, yes, we give deference to what the Torah says, and we can talk about in a minute why the Torah emphasized Kohanim. But the Mishnah, very famous Mishnah in Horayot, says, if there's two people drowning or two people captured, and you only have enough money to save one, who do you save? And it says, Kohen comes first before a Levi. And a Levi comes first before Yisrael, and Yisrael is first before a Mamzer, and continues. But then it adds a second line. It says, hold on, that's only if they're all equal in their Torah knowledge. But if the Mamzer was a Tamid Chacham, the Mamzer was knowledgeable, and the Kohen Gadol is an ignoramus, then you save the Mamzer, who's the lowest in terms of lineage, because he's a Tamid Chacham. And so while the Mishnah keeps the ancient hierarchy at the first half, but then overturns it altogether in the second half, showing that what is truly valuable is spirituality. You mentioned the garb of the Kohanim and the Kohen Gadol, but that's all external. These are all gold and silver to impress simple people that would come. But the rabbis took it to the next level, to a deeper level, and says, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of fancy clothes that you're wearing, that doesn't make you a spiritual leader, and doesn't matter that you happen to be born from a certain family, that's not what's going to give you the ingredients. The system of the rabbis is much more internal, much more meaningful, and everyone can join in, and whoever can reach a level of wisdom and knowledge, that person is fit to be a leader, not just because you happen to be born with a certain last name.
Could I jump in very quickly?
Yeah, Mike.
Okay, great. So just to quote Rabbi Shama, really brilliantly, I went around during my year in Israel in Ma'ale Adumim. I was so excited when I read this. I went around the whole yeshiva and showed this to people because I was so blown away. The fact that the Kohen Gadol has a tzitz that he wears, and the tzitz has a petil techelet in it. What do you know? What other mitzvah do we have that has something that sounds like tzitz and has a petil techelet? Everybody knows it.
Tzitzit.
Tzitzit, exactly. So the point of that is to show you something that's so powerful, and that is that, you know, we do have a Kohen Gadol, and he wears this thing that says Kodesh LaHashem, but the Torah is saying, V'hiyitem kedoshim l'Elohechem. Everybody's kadosh, everybody is holy. We have a democratization of this holiness throughout the nation, and like Rabbi Jose Faur would say, we have a horizontal society. No longer do we have a vertical society where everybody depends on the person above them for kedusha. Instead, we all have a direct line to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Rabbi Shaman, hold on, Michael. That's my part. Hold on.
Oh, my God, I'm sorry.
All right, could I respond? Thank you. Okay, beautiful. So I don't disagree with anything that the rabbi said in terms of elevating the beauty of Torah and the rabbinate and them learning Torah. And sure, you want to say that the Keter Torah eats all three? Of course it does. You want to say that Mamzer, who's a Tamid Chacham, goes ahead of Kohen? Sure he does. Right? And you have no argument there. But why need we strip down the Kehuna in order to build up Torah? No, the Kehuna is still one of the Ketarim. It still is the case that a Kohen goes above a Levi, above, right, the Ama Aretz, all things equal. And there's very good reason for it. So I want to actually describe what I think is the benefits if we ponder the idea of the Kehuna, and particular advantages that the institution of Kehuna would have above the institution of the modern rabbinate. Again, not to say that we need go back, but to at least consider its beauty. So imagine having a family whose members were dedicated to serving God. Members of this family, they knew from a young age to be schooled in spirituality. So they didn't have to waste energy struggling with the uncertainty born of complete freedom. They never had to ask themselves, should I be a Kohen or should I be a doctor? Doctor's good. You know, a doctor is very respected. Doctor, we need doctors. And they never had that uncertainty. Their parents are Kohanim. the grandparents are Kohanim, and they're going to be a Kohen. And as they pursued their path of Kehuna, they didn't need to struggle with amassing a following. They didn't need to find funding, which would force them to abandon their truth, perhaps, and strategically market their ideas through presentation. Nor did they need to distill their ideas down to cowtail to the masses. They had a station. They didn't have to take a leap and choose to renounce material possessions or to give up their land like the Buddhists did, like the Beatniks did, you know, to find spirituality. They were just told that they couldn't own land. Instead, there was this system that was built out for them. You know, it was additional restrictions for them, but also gave them additional potential. Their existence doesn't preclude others from being able to achieve spiritual heights. Everyone could pursue spirituality. Everyone could pursue Torah. It just accelerated this particular group's growth. And what I keep thinking about is B'nai Yisrael is referred to as a mamlechet Kohanim, a nation of Kohanim. And it's very, very similar. Someone might look at us and say, Elohei Abraham, Elohei Yitzhak, Elohei Yaakov, how dare you? Who cares who your ancestors were? And what would we say? Listen, everyone can pursue God. We were simply given the obligation to pursue certain stringent behaviors. And we all know the beauty that this has given our lives, the fact that we've had these additional restrictions. We all know that being born as the son of Abraham and following in that lineage has given us the potential to really lock down from a young age, because this is what it was for us. So in the same way, you don't need to knock down B'nai Israel for the Amin to rise up. No, they should be inspired and grow. Same thing with the Kehuna. This is a beautiful institution. Now, is the rabbinate not a beautiful institution? No, it's great, but it has its own flaws, born of the modern times, the capitalist society that we live in, the way that respect is doled out. And there are tremendous values that you could see when you consider Kehuna with a finer eye and with a more positive, frame.
Great, Maris, thank you. I wanna jump in here. And on that note, I wanna take a step back and talk about and hear from both of you where the system of priesthood began and what its original intent was. Now, it seems to me that the Torah itself almost anticipated a sort of revolt against the priesthood. With Korach, we have a character who seems to challenge the authority of Aharon and the priesthood in general. Aren't we all holy, right? Like, aren't we all horizontal society, like Michael said? But it seems to be that as nice of an idea as that is, and it may be true that everybody has an individual connection to Hashem, there is some sort of built-in hierarchy. So what was the Torah's goal with that? And if there is some sort of intended goal, can we just abolish that because the rabbis seem to have supplanted the Kohanim today? So Rabbi Hidri, would you like to respond?
That's a fantastic question. Thank you. And Miriam didn't tell us she was going to ask that question, but really good. I think the role of the Kohanim originally in the Torah, as we see in this parasha, was to try to control and remove corruption from religious leadership. In Egypt, we had the priests there that controlled people's afterlives, and they would decide based on their magic and incantations if someone will go to the good place or the bad place. And Torah comes and says, a Kohen is not allowed to become Tameh, can't go anywhere near those rituals, because we want to remove that corruption from them. And so we want to focus and say only one place can bring sacrifices, and only one group, not every Bechor, not every family. And so because the role of the Kohanim is actually to limit all those rites and rituals to one place so that they can be controlled and be monotheistic and not turn into paganism. But their use in that was directly tied to their role as Kohanim, as servants of the Beit HaMikdash, doing the korbanot and everything that entailed. However, as Mara said, we are all mamlechet Kohanim. And so that proves my point that our entire nation is as Kohanim. And when the leadership doesn't have to do with particular rites and rituals of animal sacrifice, or controlling what happens when after one's death, or anything like that, then we don't need to control it with one little group to make sure it doesn't turn into paganism. Because when the leadership is based on something more substantive, which is Torah learning, understanding, laws, connection with God, and faith and teachings, then it's much better if it's democratized. And I don't want to have one people set of group, little group that thinks that that's coming to them, but rather competition is what we need. And so the more people we have in the competition that can rise to the best level and show their intelligence, their wisdom, their talent, those people should rise to the top no matter who their parents are and become the best leaders.
American competition, which is basically the current model for the rabbinate, capitalist competition, doesn't lead to the finding of truth. It really led to the creation of marketing. So the modern day rabbi, as I would say, is the influencer, the celebrity, the person who makes the Pepsi ad, who tells you that if you drink Pepsi, you're going to turn into Santa Claus. And, you know, and then you'll see the commercial and they basically promise you nirvana on account of good behavior. And so you have a bunch of false preachers whose only job is to get more followers, get more views, which is exactly marketing. And we see that it doesn't lead towards truth. It leads towards a distortion of truth and behavior from leaders of telling a certain type of truth to be heard, which is the capitalistic model. If I cannot say, if I cannot run an ad that will return me dollars, return me views, return me allegiance, then I can't run it, as opposed to having someone dedicated. And again, in terms of democratization, it could still be democratized in the same way that B'nai Israel's existence. We don't say everyone is equal, right? We have this force in society now. It's a liberal force that everyone is equal. Everyone has opportunity, right? We're building this horizontal society, beautiful, and it's brought us so much good. So again, I'm not trying to drag us back to the Stone Ages, just to point out the flaws and the areas that it has struggled. So you have these people where everyone's equal, right? There's no difference in us genetically. No, but there might be, you know, there might be differences, right? We could look at people and people are different. Not everyone is the same. One person might have a propensity to be a musician. He's built that way. Someone leans more towards spirituality. Someone leads more to pragmatic thinking and execution and acknowledging. And then there's differences in paths and families and groups that choose a path, just like the Jews have. So again, I think that we found that having people who are set aside and not completely opening up competition, not leading people to compete and then, you know, have to use different tactics, but rather to have people who is distinguished that is their obligation. And it's not an honor. It's a challenge. In some ways it's an honor, but it's a burden. In the same way, B'nai Israel, what, this is an honor? It's unbelievable. Hashem chose us. We have this unbelievable mission and we're so grateful, but also it comes with it a lot of responsibility. And I don't think it's that we should look at the Kohanim like, oh, they got all this power for free and they didn't earn it and the system is so corrupt or anything like that.
I feel like I have to throw in there that the priesthood historically has been very corrupt, in fact. Often the temple was, while it might be the center of religious, the center of religious life, it was happened to be a center of corruption as well. So I think that, you know, is worth noting. And Maris, I would just push you a little bit to say, are you advocating for a social hierarchy that depends on genetics? That's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, it could be. Okay, so I want to respond to both of those. So give me the, what was the first question? Give it to me one more time because you got me with the second one.
About the corruption of the priesthood.
Oh, good, good. So we have seen that there is tremendous challenges when we create priests with too much power. And I think Christianity, even more so than us, where you created this priest who has all this power and has abused his power historically. And even in the whole sense of this argument, right? Again, I'm not arguing that we should go backwards. Not at all. I'm not arguing that one day, that right now we should reinstitute the Kohanim. I'm not arguing that. We're arguing about some hypothetical point in the future. But what my goal in doing so is, and I think this is a very useful frame, is that we like to view progress always as good. That's the natural way of people. We're making progress, progress, progress. Progress is good. Progress is usually good. And there is the force of progress. It's inevitable progress. We're never throwing away our phones. We're never moving backwards. And I'm not arguing to move backwards. But you have heard in Judaism this idea that the people at closer to Har Sinai were holier, right? I never understood what I should make of that idea. But it's a very different frame where you look at the past as holy. So I'm going to look at Abraham as holy. I'm going to look at this point in the past and give it reverence, right? And now it's useful because we live in a society that is irreverent, that has hates their priests, that hates religion, that hates anything that has been given respect because of the abuses of power, rightfully so. But because we were told, always look back, what it's forcing me to do is look at the current situation and also identify problems. And in that, it's a very useful frame. And if you could look at a point back in time and say, well, there were better ways to the way we used to do things, I think that that's very powerful and will lead us towards a proper way of making progress, where we're still going to progress, but where we're able to understand the ways that the past used to be better.
Thank you. Michael, do you have a question? Michael Tabelli?
Yes, I have a comment. I'm not sure which side it's in support of, but I think it really depends on whether the priesthood is seen as like an honor, more of an honor, or more of an obligation and a duty of the priesthood to the people. So then in that case, they would be serving rather than being the served. And in addition, there's also some ways that a kohanut could become, you know, like pasul or lost. I'm pretty sure. I don't know if that's 100%, but which would also have a check on their corruption.
Right. I think that's a great point. And having checks and balances is essential. I think there's a group that feels entitled, then there's more potential for corruption. But a group that has to earn it and is always subject to criticism and has to answer to the people that he is serving, then that always makes sure that it's not going to be for self-honor or prestige, but rather to be a public servant.
Thank you. Merle, did you want to add anything?
I think I'm good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. We are going to hear closing statements from both Maris and Rabbi Hidari. Maris, you want to go first?
I feel like I just went.
You think you did? Okay, Rabbi Hidari, do you have anything to add?
Sure. I'll cite one more source. Lots of people are studying Pirkei Avot these days between Pesach and Shavuot. And everybody knows the opening of Pirkei Avot by heart. Moshe kibel Torah mi Sinai, umsara li Yehoshua la zikenim. Zikenim nevi'im esor l'anshe kneset ha'gedola. And I'll ask you a question. Who's missing from the list?
Kohanim.
Kohanim are missing. Even though in the Torah it says Moshe gave the Torah to the Kohanim for safekeeping, the rabbi said the main bearers of our tradition are the Zikenim, Nevi'im, which we don't have anymore, but then Anshei Knesset HaGedola. It's the sages that are the bearers of the tradition since then, and I think will be far into the future.
Beautiful.
I will just add in closing, I want us to take seriously, and I know this is not fair, I'm not giving Rabbi Hidari a chance to respond to this, but I think we should take seriously what this would really mean to actually supplant the idea of the Kohanim, to get rid of the honors that we get to give to the Kohanim, Birkat Kohanim, to remove that from our tradition and from our society. So while I think both made very good points, it is important to consider what the ramifications of either option would be. I know that in the non-Orthodox communities, they actually totally abolished the system of Kohanim and Levim. There is no such thing. Everybody is equal. Everybody is part of the Jewish people. I would ask you to consider, does that lose something when we, you know, continue forward creating and sustaining a Jewish community? So thank you to our panelists.
And I'm good. I have one more after that, but I didn't know Miriam was joining on my team. That was unbelievable. Both of her.
I'm Switzerland. I.
Unbelievable. And I think that we have a tendency to want to make progress and to look back at institutions in the past with our modern lens, and it's great. And we examine them. And I gave a class this last week on the Mekalel, the man who curses God. We say freedom of speech, but they killed him in the Sweet Parasha. Interesting, right? What do we do when our inclination rubs against the Torah? But I think that a lot of times the answer is explore the Torah's concept deeper. Dive in. Why can't you curse God? And what does it mean then? And why do I think that you might be able to? It doesn't mean, again, legislation. I'm not arguing in that kind of way at all. It just means that it's an opportunity to see something that might be lost, to look back. And as we barrel through time and space in this rapid progress to a place where we're having meetings on Zoom, you know, we remember all of the great things that we had in the past and we give them their due. We give our ancestors' way the voice and the power that it deserves, and that guides our progress.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, everybody. That was fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would add, Miriam, that your question is actually quite practical this morning, because in our Zoom tefillah, it's not a minyan, but we do read the section of Torah, the Parashat HaShavua, Monday and Thursday mornings. And, you know, as I'm leading it, I like to divvy out the parts to a Kohen Levi Yisrael. So this morning, I called upon a couple of Kohanim that were there to read, but they weren't prepared to read. And so they said, no. And then there was a Levi who was like, oh, I'll read it. And so I gave the part Kohen to Levi. So I did try to keep the hierarchy, even though we didn't have to, it wasn't official minyan. But when the Kohanim were not prepared to read, they then they lost their spot.
Also, Michael and I had a conversation beforehand, like I said. We recorded that too, so I imagine we'll send this out if people want, and we'll send that out also. And Michael had also underbooked that. I wish we could have more time and more.
Rabbi, did you demote them?
Well, actually, on the note of reading, Morris, do you want to read Emor now?
Michael's turn.
You want me to?
Oh, yes, I do.
All right. Sure.
Okay, so let me share the screen. Just give me a second. One moment.
You're on your for what?
Okay.
All right. All right. ויאמר אדוני אל משה אמור אל הכהנים בני אהרון ואמרת להם לנפש לא יטמע בעמיו כי אם נשארו הקרוב אליו לאמו לאביו ולבנו ביתו לאחיו ולאחותו ולבתולה קרובה אליו אשר לא הייתה לאיש לא יטמע בעל בעמיו והחלו ויקרחו קרחה בראשם, ובעד זקנם לא יגלחו, ובבשרם לא ישרטו שרתת, קדושים יהיו לאלוהיהם, ולא יחללו שם אלוהיהם, כי את אשי אדוני לחם אלוהיהם, הם מקריבים והיו קודש, אישה זונה וחללה לא ייקחו, ואישה גירושה מאישה לא ייקחו, כי קדוש הוא לאלוהיו, וקידשתו, יד לחם אלוהיך ומקריב קדוש יהיה לך, כי קדוש אני אדוני, מקדישכם ובת איש כהן, כי תחל לזנות את אביה, היא מחללת באש. תשרף, והכהן הגדול מאחיו, אשר יושג על ראשו, שמן המשחה מלד ידו, ולבוש את הבגדים את ראשו לא יפרח, ובגדיו לא יפרום, ועל כל נפשו דמד לא יבוא, לאביו ולמו לא יטמע, ומן המקדש לא יסב ולא יחלל את מקדש אלוהיו, נזר שמן משחת אלוהיו עליו אני אדוני והוא אישה בבתוליה ייקח אלמנה וגרושה וחללה זונה את אלה לא ייקח כי אם בתולה מעמיו ייקח אישה ולא יחלל זרעו בעמיו כי אני אדוני מקדשו.
Beautiful. Thank you, Michael.
But thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.